cool. So I've had some connection with the church on and off, I think maybe for 10 years. And Nick is connected with what we do in Romania, which if you're interested in finding out more about, we've got these little updates that we write. This is our latest one, fresh off the press. And I think they'll be out here, will they, Nick? Yeah, so you're welcome to grab one of those. One of the things that I do a lot of in Romania and around Europe is go to places which are not churches, places like universities or schools, and talk about big questions that people have about God. Is this going to work, or am I going to have to do hand? I might have to do hand movements, right? Should we? Yeah. So one of the big questions that comes up a lot is the question of why isn't God more obvious? And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. Why isn't God more obvious? This might be a question that you have, because if there is a God, that's quite a big deal, and you'd think that something as big a deal as God would be something that would be obvious to everybody, and it doesn't seem like it's obvious to everybody. It might be a question that you've had from friends or work colleagues, or it might just be a question that you sense is underlying other people's objections to God. What I want to do is just talk about this question for a few minutes this morning. And I'm not going to argue that God is obvious. When people say to me, why isn't God more obvious? I say, yeah, I agree with you. God's not obvious. God's not simple. God can be very tricky, actually. But when people ask me this question, well, if there's a God, why isn't he more obvious? Why doesn't he make himself more clear? I usually ask them back one of 10 questions, and I want to ask you those 10 questions. Maybe they'll be helpful for you in thinking about God. Maybe they'll be helpful for you as you talk to other people about God. The first question is this. Does real equal obvious? Does real equal obvious? Is everything which is real obvious? So, for example, what's in this egg? Something's in there, right? It could. If I cook that egg, is it fresh? Is it rotten? If I cooked it, would I get a mini roast chicken? Or would I get a boiled egg? I don't know, right? I can't tell from the outside. Lots of things are real, but something's really in there. And lots of things are real, but not obvious. For example, quantum mechanics. Friends of mine who are scientifically minded tell me, actually, this stuff is real. Now, for me, I tried reading a book about quantum mechanics, and I tell you, I've never slept so well in my life as trying to get through that book every night. And my first degree was in English literature, so I could write a poem about the word quantum or something, but I don't know. It's a mystery to me, but I believe that stuff's real. Another thing is heliocentrism. I don't know if you know about heliocentrism, but heliocentrism is the idea that the Earth revolves around the sun. Now, this is not obvious to me because I wake up every morning and the sun is moving across the sky. I can actually see it doing that. Like, it looks like the sun is moving across the sky, and it took a long time and work and research. Is that okay? He is dealing with a microphone for anyone concerned. Okay. Is that better? Yeah. It took years, actually, for people to figure out that the Earth is revolving around the sun and not the other way around. Another thing that's not obvious is magic eye pictures. I don't know if you remember these. They were very popular a few years ago. Basically, you had these sort of weird abstract pieces of art, and people would buy entire books of it, and they'd stare at it, and you do this, and all of a sudden you would see a picture of a horse or a boat or a cow. Or so it's kind of weird, really, that you were like buying books just so you could do that. And when they were popular, I went through a phase of buying abstract art postcards and sending them to my friends and writing on the back, "This is a magic eye picture." Even though it wasn't. And I just like the idea of him being like, I can't see it. But not everything which is real is obvious, is it? So we might say, well, God doesn't seem very obvious. Okay, all right, but not everything which is real is obvious. And I guess we kind of know that. But we feel like, okay, something as important as God, everything which is relevant to my life, should be obvious. Now, when I speak to students, which is the audience I speak to most frequently, I like them to imagine this scenario. Imagine there's someone in your university, and they're madly in love with you, and they would be the perfect person for you to spend your life with. And every time you walk past, their heart just melts and it skips a beat and they go to sleep thinking about you. The only thing is they never mention it to you. I say, is this happening to you? I ask them. You don't know. But if there were that situation, it would not be obvious to you that that person's in love with you, but it would be potentially very relevant to you. And actually, not everything which is even relevant to our lives is immediately, or at least potentially relevant to our lives, is immediately obvious to us. And I would ask the question, is anything obvious? There's a lot of research done on what people believe around the world. The very, very highest estimates are that less than 16% of the world's population is atheist. So when I'm talking to friends who say, well, I'm an atheist, and why isn't God more obvious? Well, why isn't atheism more obvious? It doesn't seem like anything is very obvious. And Terry Pratchett, the late fantasy author, writes in one of his books, whoever had created humanity had left a major design flaw. It was its tendency to bend at the knees. And what he's saying, if you look at the world, there's something about humanity in general which can't exclude the idea that there at least being something or someone out there, and there's a tendency in humanity to bend the knees towards something bigger than them. So if we're going with obvious as a criteria of whether something's true or not, well, it certainly doesn't seem like atheism is obvious. And perhaps it's helpful just to say, look, nothing's really very obvious in this area. So a helpful question then, okay, why isn't God more obvious? A helpful question is what do we mean when we say the word God? And I've got a diagram that I use to help people understand the word God. Here we are. So this is the universe, okay? I'm not sure it's a circle. I don't know. I just represent it as a circle, okay? I'm not saying it's circular. We are in the universe. So just so you know where you are right now, like, you are in it, all right? God is not a thing in our universe. So people often say, well, how can we find God? You can't. You can't find God. So you get quite often, one of the things I'm often asked to talk about is, has science disproved God? And there's a lot to say about it. I'm not trying to oversimplify the question, but one pretty profound aspect of it is, how would it possibly disprove God? God is not a thing that you can find. Like, you can't photograph him on holiday in Brazil, or you're down in the late in your kitchen one night, you're getting something out the fridge, and there's God running across the floor, and you trap him under a jar. He's not a thing. You can't find God, okay? If you want to, now you expect the universe to be consistent with the existence of a God. If there is a God, and God is the reason there's something rather than nothing, the reason everything is here, certainly you'd expect the things within that circle to be be consistent with the existence of a God, but you wouldn't expect to find him. If you're going to know anything about God, he's somehow going to have to show himself to us, right? That's the only way you could know anything about God. Which brings us to the next question. What are God's options? If God were to show himself to us, how could he do that? And I would suggest to you, God has two options of how he could show himself to you. The first option is that God could show himself universally. You wake up every morning, you're having breakfast, or you wake up late morning if you're a teenager, and you're having breakfast, and you hear a voice from the sky shouting, just to remind you, there is a God, and it's me. Or every time you close your eyes, I'm glad that tickled you, Katie. Every time you close your eyes, it's like a little kind of illuminated tattoo. Don't forget there's a God, right? Like, that would be, if God showed himself universally to everybody, and this is usually, I think, where the problem comes in the discussion with people. Because people say, well, God's not obvious. And God, and actually, as Christians, we believe God's left hints of himself absolutely everywhere in what it means to be human, in the world around us, in nature, everywhere. But not super obvious, super explicit kind of stuff. And Okay, try changing my batteries. I'll just use that, actually. All right. Does it come out? Okay, so there we are. For those of you who missed up to this point, hopefully you saw the slides, okay? All right, so this is often the sticking point. So people say, well, I can't believe in God if he didn't do that. And I think that's not a very good attitude, because what we've decided is, if I were to believe in God, I could only believe in this kind of God who revealed himself this way. And the problem with it is that everybody who actually believes in a God, whether that's kind of Jew or Christian or Muslim, anybody who says, I believe in God, doesn't believe that God has made himself most explicit universally. But he's done it in a specific time in history and a specific location geographically. And that's what everybody generally who believes in a God who has any idea what other than there might be something out there and says, no, I believe in God, I try to worship this God, will say, I believe specifically that he's revealed himself somewhere. So what are our options? If we've decided, maybe God's revealed himself locally. Aren't there like hundreds or thousands of religions, and how could I possibly choose? They all say such different things about God. So what are our options? Here, I'll flick on a couple of slides. Actually, I would say there are not that many options. If you look around the world, yes, there are many religions. That's true. But if you look at any religion or way of seeing the world, which is held by more than 1% of the world's population, so we're not setting the bar very high here. We're just saying what has been seen by people, what has been seen as credible or convincing enough for more than 1% of the world's population in our modern world to hold this viewpoint. You actually discover that there are just seven ways of seeing the world held by more than 1% of the world's population. So that makes your research pretty easy. These are the seven: Buddhism, agnosticism and atheism, traditional Chinese religion, traditional African religion, Hinduism, Islam, Christianity. Now, what I'm going to talk about from this point out isn't whether they're true, but what they might be able to tell us about the question of God. And Buddhism and agnosticism and atheism, almost every form of Buddhism and every form of atheism certainly say there isn't a God. And agnosticism says, I don't know, like there might be. And people are often surprised to discover, when I say Buddhists don't believe in God, people kind of act like, oh, how dare you say that? That's so rude. Of course they do. All religions believe in God, but they really don't. And I've been to Buddhist temples. I've visited the Buddhist equivalent of the Alpha Course once, and genuinely they don't. Let me show you a couple of quotes. This is a friend of mine, Ellis Potter, who was a Buddhist monk. He says, in Zen, we say, if you see the Buddha, kill him. If you have an idea that absolute reality is outside yourself, you have to get rid of that idea. Or another person who is one of the leading Buddhist thinkers of the last century said the idea of a personal deity, a creator God, is incompatible with Buddha's teachings. So this doesn't tell you whether Buddhism's true or not, but what it does tell you on the question of God is, Ruben, thanks. If you want to get on a train to London, if you want to get to London, the first trick to doing that is to get on a train which claims to be trying to get to London. And if you want to discover God, you might want to look somewhere where people actually believe there is a God. So that leaves us with five options if we're talking about God. Those options are Chinese traditional religions, African traditional religions, Hinduism, Islam, and Christianity. So, thanks. Okay, now, I want to make a distinction between the term God, that says God up there, but it's very faded, sorry. God and gods. People often think the difference between God and gods is several and God is one. And it's basically the same thing. It's a difference of numbers. If you believe in the gods, or you're, a polytheist, right? That means you just believe in lots of this thing. And if you're a monotheist, you believe in one God, you believe in one of this thing. Now, that's not actually accurate. Because if you look at what people believe about gods, when people use the word, when people use the word God, they mean, when they say God, they mean the reason there's something rather than nothing, the cause of everything, the cause of our universe. When people use the term gods, they're not referring to the source of all reality, the reason there's something rather than nothing. They're referring to a thing in our universe. Some sense, if it's not terribly disrespectful to say, a little bit closer to kind of a Marvel superhero type thing, a very powerful entity within our world, perhaps not a physical entity, but a created entity. They're talking about things, not the reason there is things. So there's a big difference between believing in God and believing in gods. And Chinese traditional religions, African traditional religions, and Hinduism, some forms of each of these say there may be a creator out there. And some forms of all of those. But none of them talk to you about how to connect with him. None of them say that he has attempted to connect with you and make himself clear to you. Actually, they will say that your relationship is to be with the gods. And you'll know that if you have friends. First two of these are not very prevalent here, but I'm sure many of you have friends who are Hindu, and you've seen the little statues that people have in their house, because their relationship is with the gods, who reflect some aspect of the God, but they aren't the God. You relate to these things. You don't relate to the one who made it all. So there are actually only two ways of seeing the world which are popular in our world today, which focus on a God who reveals himself to us, and those are Islam or Christianity. So these would be our two options. If you want to look at the question of God, I would say those are the two places in our world where people are saying the source of all reality has, at a specific time and place in history, made himself or herself obvious to us in a way that we can understand and respond to. And there's a difference between the way that Christians and Muslims but what they believe about God. So Muslims say that if you want to find out about God, you need to look at the book. They say that for all eternity, the words of the Quran were with Allah, and at a certain point in history, God gave the words of the Quran, the eternal words of the Quran, to Muhammad. Muhammad wrote them down, and now we have these. And the most obvious picture of God we have is this book. Now, in Christianity, God is a community, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And one of that community, the Son, came and lived and walked among us. So in Christianity, we say, do you want to know what God is like? Look at the man. Look at what Jesus is like. Now, the book is important in Christianity, but it's important because it points to the man. And so the equivalent of the Quran in Christianity isn't the Bible, it's Jesus. It's the clearest picture we have of God. And think about the difference that makes. So if God has given us a book, do you want to flick on, Ruben? If God's given us a book, what has he given us? He's given us his words, right? If he's given us a book, he's given us his words. If he has come to us in Jesus, what's he given us? Himself. And this is a profound difference. I would say I was talking, doing RE lessons last week, actually, in Nottingham with classes of kids who were kind of half Muslim, half nominal Christian, was kind of a makeup of the class. And I was saying to them that I think the two main distinctions between Christianity and Islam, one is how do we know about God? The second one is what does God want from us? And because God gives us his words in Islam, what he wants from us fundamentally is obedience. Because God gives to us himself in Christianity, what he wants from us fundamentally is relationship. He wants to know us. So just a quote from a very famous, probably after Muhammad, the most influential Islamic philosopher. He says, people are slaves. They do not know him. And it would be absolutely impossible for them to know him. And if you read a book on Islam, you'll find this. It says, our job is to obey God. That's what we're here for. Now, you read Jesus, and Jesus says this. Jesus says, I have called you friends. It's inconceivable. You wouldn't come across anything, any statement like that in Islam. I've called you friends. But this is at the heart of the Christian faith, is a God who wants to know you and call you into friendship with himself. Which raises the question for me, and if you've got questions about Islam, I'm happy to try and answer those, but just to zoom in on Jesus, what do you make of Jesus would be, I would say, the most important question. And this is when I'm talking to people who are skeptical about the Christian faith, that's probably where I want to get them to, is you should probably take a look at Jesus if you're going to have an informed opinion about this. Jesus said, whoever has seen me has seen the Father. So what he was saying was, do you want to know what God's like? Look at me. So Katie, before I came up, read a passage from the life of Jesus. It occurs just after Jesus has died and he's risen from the dead. And this is what happens. People are claiming that Jesus has risen from the dead. And this is how it reads. On the evening of the first day of that week, when the disciples, that's the followers of Jesus, were together with the doors locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Because obviously, if everybody thought you were dead and you turn up alive again, you probably do have to say, peace be with you. Calm down, everybody. I know it's a little freaky. And it goes on. Now, Thomas was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand in his side, I will not believe. So what he's saying is, I know you're claiming the resurrection and Jesus has risen from the dead. I'm very skeptical. This seems crazy. And just for you to know, somebody rising from the dead was a crazy idea in the first century, just like it's a crazy idea now. And people believe it because they think there's sufficient evidence for it. But Thomas didn't think there was sufficient evidence for it. So passage goes on and it says, a week later, his disciples were in the house again and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand and put it in my side. Stop doubting and believing. Now it's interesting that Jesus turns up and he doesn't say, you stupid idiot. Like, just have faith, just trust. My goodness, have I not taught you anything? He doesn't say that. He said, you are asking for reasons to believe. Here are some reasons. Put your hand in here. Put your fingers in. And it's interesting because if Jesus shows us God, what Jesus shows us is a God who's very comfortable with our questions, with our doubts, with us coming and going, you know, I'm not sure about this. I'm struggling. I don't know whether this is true. We don't have a God who just says, you know, shut your mind off and have faith. He doesn't say that. He says, if you've got questions, ask them. Actually, that's okay. It's okay to not be sure. It's okay to have questions. And Jesus goes on to say this. He says, Thomas says to him, my Lord and my God. And Jesus says, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Now, it's interesting. People sometimes misread this. Jesus doesn't say, blessed are those who have not asked questions. Blessed are those who have no evidence and yet have believed. He said, you've seen me and your evidence is something physical. You could put your hand here. But there's other reasons why we should believe. And Jesus isn't setting a tension here between evidence and belief. He's setting an opposition here between there are some people who won't have evidence of their eyes and yet they believe. That might be historical research. That might be seeing God at work in other people's lives and saying, my gosh, these people who talk about Jesus is real and he's alive, I can see that in their life. That might be something else. But he's not saying, oh, just believe. It's those who have not seen and yet believe. Those who base their faith on something other than the physical Jesus in front of them. So the next question I would ask you is, what are your questions? If God is comfortable with your questions, and if God, Jesus shows us God, then God is comfortable with your questions. As I've been speaking now, what questions have gone through your head? during this presentation. What are your thoughts? And I don't know, some of you probably have varying degrees of connection with church, and you may have, and even I found this with people actually who've been in church for a long time, there can be an assumption that church is not a place I could ask that question. I better not, and even more so I find among friends who are new, they're like, oh, I don't want to say that. That might rock the boat, or that might pop someone's bubble, or whatever else it is to ask this hard question. Now, the funny thing is, in my experience, I've found one of the best places to ask questions is in church. And it's one of the places where people are actually quite comfortable with it, and nothing is off limits. And I'm sure you know people here who you could ask questions of. If you don't, I had Nick come and do a seminar for me on hard questions in Romania, and I'm happy to try and help with your questions. But I'd encourage you, if there's stuff you're thinking about, questions and doubts in your mind, talk to people about them, because actually you'll find it's a very safe place to ask those questions. The penultimate question I'd ask you is, would you prefer obvious? Now, there's a piece of research done recently in the Journal of Psychology and Personality and Social Psychology, which is an academic journal, which discovered that atheists and agnostics are statistically more angry at God than believers, which is weird, isn't it? Because you think, like, hang on, you don't believe in God, but you're angry at him. And there is a stereotype of the angry atheist, and I have lots of happy, not angry, well-balanced atheistic friends. But there's also a truth that some people don't believe in God because they're disappointed with him, because they feel like they've let him down, because there's some kind of tension between them and him. So it's important to know it's not just an academic question for many people. And Jesus said this. He said, light has come into the world, but people prefer darkness rather than light. And if you think about the story of Jesus, it's the story of God stepping into human history, making himself as obvious, the most obvious he's ever made himself in human history, in the person of Jesus. And what do people do with him? They murder him. That's the story of the New Testament, is the story of, do you want God to be obvious? Because when he made himself most obvious, people killed him. And there is that truth that for many of us, the biggest tension between us and God isn't an intellectual question, legitimate though those are. It's actually, and it's not even a disappointment with God, although it's perfectly acceptable, Christian or non-Christian, to express to God how you're disappointed with him and how you're annoyed with him. The Bible is full of people doing that. But at its heart, for many of us, it's we just don't want God to be true, and we don't want God to be real, because if he is real, well, there's implications to that, aren't we? And there's someone bigger than us, and actually he's in authority and he's in charge, and I don't set the rules, and actually I'm not sure from what I know about God he's how I'd like him to be, so no, I'm going to say that I don't believe in him. And the mathematician Blaise Pascal said, there is enough light for those who want to believe and enough shadow for those who don't. And I wonder if this is one reason God has not made himself more obvious. In a way, he's made himself super obvious, hasn't he? Jesus, the best, the most famous person in human history. You know, no books have been written, more books have been written about anyone else than Jesus. More books written about him, most famous person in human history. Even if you're not Christian, if you're Muslim, he's a prophet. If you're Sikh or Hindu, he's an avatar or a guru. Even atheists like Philip Pullman will write books about Jesus. He's absolutely stunningly famous. And in a country like Britain, you have church buildings everywhere. You have strong Christian history, history of the Bible, and in this country. And yet, it is quite possible to live in this world and completely ignore him. And it's quite possible to grow up in a country where it's saturated by the Bible throughout its history and not read it. Because actually, God has given enough light for those who want to believe, enough shadow for those who want to hide. So it's quite possible for us to hide. I remember walking along the street once in in Chicago it was actually. And I was walking on the street and I was thinking, it was at night, and I was thinking, what would I do if I met Jesus on this street corner? And I was thinking, there's one part of me which said I would probably fall to my knees and cry and say, thank you so much for everything that you've done for me. And it would be a a wonderful emotional moment. There's another part which said I'd punch him in the face and run away because he's very awkward. I don't want someone who can be in charge of me. I prefer to be in charge of my own life, and there's enough light for those who want to believe and enough shadow for those who want to hide. Finally, question number 10 I would ask is, what is your next step? So this is a question I'd ask people, and also if you are thinking, oh, okay, I haven't looked at things this way, I hadn't realized perhaps that Jesus could be quite important to my quest in looking into Jesus. There's a comedian, Lee Mack, said this. He said, I always think that if an alien came down and you were the only person they met and they said, what's life all about? What's Earth about? Tell us everything. And you said, well, there's this book here that purports to tell you everything. Some people believe it to be true. Some people do not believe it to be true. Wow, what's it like? And you go, I don't know. I've never read it. It'd be an odd thing to do, wouldn't it? And I would suggest if you have not read about Jesus and you've not looked into the life of Jesus, that that would be quite a good thing to do. And if you haven't done it lately, it would be quite a good thing to do again. Often when I'm around speaking, people go, I just think that stuff just for kids, you know. I think it's just for the simple-minded and the young. And I say, well, when did you last look into it? And they either say like Sunday school or RE lessons or something. I go, right, but you do know that Sunday school and RE lessons are pitched at kids. So the reason it seemed for the young is because you looked at it in context aimed at the young. But I would suggest that maybe as an adult, you look at it afresh with an open mind. And if you haven't, whether you're Christian or not Christian, if you haven't read The Life of Jesus lately, I'd recommend it. At the church here, they regularly run things like, you run Christianity Explored, don't you, and Alpha. Next time one of those is running, I really recommend it. It's a good course to look at the life of Jesus, and I know Nick would be happy to sit down with you and read somebody from the church would be happy to sit down and read with you if you haven't read the Gospels, the stories of Jesus before. There's lots of people would be happy to talk with you about those. One of my favorite writers is a Czech writer called Thomas Halleck, and he says he's got this interesting bit in one of his books where he talks about atheism and Christianity. Ruben. He says that often we think, we often think of atheists and Christians as opposites to one another. He says we shouldn't think of atheism and Christianity as opposites. He says we should think of them as points along a spectrum. And he says, what is the difference between atheism and faith? And he says this, he says, patience is what I consider to be the main difference between faith and atheism. Basically, he says, no, God's not very obvious, is he? And no, there is enough light for those who want to see, enough darkness for those who want to hide. God's not obvious. And so we have a couple of choices with that. One is to say, God's not obvious, I give up. The other one is to go, God's not obvious, but it's worth looking into whether he's real. And he says, people who actually say, okay, I'm going to take the time to look into this and find out about this. He says it's the patience of not immediately dismissing God on the basis that he's not obvious, but actually taking that step of finding out about him and looking into the person of Jesus that makes the difference. And so I would recommend to you, if you haven't taken the time to do that, that would be good to do. And if you're talking to friends who are skeptical about these things, that would be a good thing to recommend to them. Actually, look, it's a big question, isn't it? It's worth taking a bit of time at least to look into this and figure out, because no, God's not obvious, but what if even though he's not obvious, what if he's real? Great. Well, I'm around after for the football. I got my England 1966 shirt on because I have three children, and in life they will have many disappointments, and I think the best way to help them learn to cope with that is by supporting England. So there's a spiritual dimension of Sports Sunday again. All right, shall I pray and then, oh, great. Well, Father God, I thank you so much that